Welcome to Brains, Bibles, and Beyond, where we discuss theology and worldview apologetics. I'm Nate Day with Think Like Christ Ministries, and I'm here with our resident theologian Joel Willoughby with Brains and Bibles.
If you would like more information about our ministries, check out our websites, brainsandbibles.com and thinklikechrist.org. And on whatever platform you are using, please like, share, subscribe, do whatever else you know you should do to help us out.
If you have any questions, send them to podcast@thinklikechrist.org.
And all you budding theologians out there, go grab your favorite theological coffee receptacle and enjoy this episode.
Welcome back, everybody, to my mom's favorite podcast.
Yeah.
I am Nate Davis, Joel Willoughby. You guys already know us. And today we're going to continue our talk on the Nephilim. Mm. So last month we ended with talking about kind of getting into the Nephilim after the flood.
Yes.
And
just starting.
Just starting. Kind of mentioned it a little bit. The Anakim was brought up right at the end. Right. And so, Joel, why don't you just give us a little bit of a recap? Sure. Just kind of bring us up to speed, make sure we're continuing on where we left off, and that we aren't having too many gaps. Obviously, this is not an exhaustive, complete study on everything, and we're kind of at high level hitting this stuff. So you can always dig in deeper yourself.
So right now, I'm working with a 31-page document myself. So obviously, we're not hitting all that stuff. That's an outline form, most of it. And so that is just to say that, yes, there is more to say. So go ahead and ask questions. Go ahead and you know, make some comments and things, and that'd be great. We'd love it. So we've covered some of the issues, though. I'm trying to hit the major stuff, the nuts and bolts and whatnot. And what we see is in Genesis 6:4, mentioning the Nephilim, that if you were to trace that word, and not every translation has that in the English there, but it is the Hebrew word that's there. It's only found in one other place. It's used twice in Numbers 13:33. So we go over there, and we actually read the whole passage, 28 through 33. And what we see is when they're describing the land, because they had the spies go out in the land of Canaan here, in verse 28, they said, and besides, basically the people being strong and their cities being fortified and very large, they said, we saw the descendants of Anak there. And so we kind of come to our next thing. As we look at the Nephilim after the flood, we see this group that is equivalent to the Nephilim. So it says the descendants of Anak were there. Verse 32 says, all the people that we saw in it are of great height. Verse 33 says, we saw the Nephilim. And then they clarified that to say the sons of Anak who come from the Nephilim. And then verse 33, it continues and says, basically the size difference was so much they described it as, you know, being like grasshoppers in front of them. That's sort of an idea. And so here we have this connection. So now we have another piece of the puzzle. We're going to follow that, see where it leads.
Now, will these guys exaggerate? Because these were the guys trying to talk everyone out of attacking.
Mm-hmm.
So were they exaggerating? And compare that to what Caleb said, right?
Well, Caleb's just like, yeah, let's go get him.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't care about the size.
Yeah,
he didn't care. Really didn't even bring it up.
Because he had faith in God.
Yeah, because God's bigger than...
Than giants. Yeah, I think that the big issue here is that God promised it to them. God got them out of Egypt. God got them through the wilderness. He says, here it is. This is what you need to do. And then all of a sudden they start shaking their boots. You know, they're like, they're walking by sight, not by faith.
Which, you know, this is kind of a recurring theme.
Yeah. And they've seen so many things. I mean, like God didn't just throw them out there to the wolves. He showed them so many incredible miracles over and over and over again.
Defeating Egypt, you know, crossing the Red Sea.
Right. Even defeating, you know, like Jericho already.
All sorts of other. And then, of course, over the next 40 years, you're going to have a lot more things show up because while they're wandering around the desert, lots of more good things happen to them.
Providing food and water all the time. And yeah. Anyways, so, exaggeration. I mean, obviously,
it's possible.
It was not an exact proportion of grasshopper to adult male, you know, because that you think about how much of a height difference there is. What would that be, like 150 times or something? I'm not sure how many grasshoppers stack up to be us.
I never measured a grasshopper, but, you know, it's a lot.
They're only like a couple inches off the ground, right?
You know? But the point being, these are some big dudes.
So I think the idea is they felt like it. You know, it's kind of like if you're high up in a tree or something, and it's like, oh, it looks like everybody's ants down there, you know. There's an obvious, like, we know what you mean kind of thing. The idea was this was significant because if I stand next to someone that's a foot taller than me, I think, wow, that guy's tall. But I don't think I'm like a grasshopper, you know. I think there's a lot more than that going on. And you notice that even Joshua and Caleb didn't argue about that point. They didn't say they weren't that much bigger. They just said, we can take him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big difference. Okay, so with all of that, as we kind of continue on, you know, really focusing on the Anakim now, all right? So there are people that come from the Nephilim.
They're the descendants of the Nephilim.
Yes. Yeah. So we have to understand that the Nephilim were like the purebreds. They're the first. They're the biggest, baddest.
Yeah, and I remember the Nephilim were before the flood.
Right.
And then that same passage says, and after the flood.
Yes.
So these are at least descendants of those. So
it's like,
and that's how we ended last episode was, you know, how do we get these now after the flood? Which is really only a couple options that it could be.
Either the Sons of God event happens again, which I said I didn't think so, and I kind of teased it saying I'll explain more fully later. Because of the consequence, how severe it was.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd say, well, so then it would have to be that the DNA was carried on the ark. The only other way it could happen, really, one way or another. And so, you look at dogs, okay? So you basically have like wolves, and then you have chihuahuas. in a very basic, generic sense, these dogs come from some kind of a wolf-type creature, you know, originally. There's speciation. It's kind of like how it went from Adam and Eve to you and I, kind of a thing. There's this degradation, you know.
For some of us more than others.
Yeah, some of us more than others. And then you have these, you know, Nephilim kind of, you know, being watered down, so to speak. Because this was a significant amount of time afterwards.
But they weren't watered down so much so that they weren't still giants.
Right. Yeah. So that just shows you how really awesome. You know, in a physical sense.
Yeah, because how many years after the flood was this then?
This, let's see, probably like 400 or 500 years, somewhere in there. Or 500 years after.
Okay. Yeah. Is that all? After the flood?
Yeah, that's it. That's okay. It.
Well, that's not very long.
Sometimes it gets a little misleading because we don't realize, like, sometimes the gaps are huge and sometimes they're really small. And so then you have to, you know, kind of look at that historically. But yeah, that's all it was, about 400 or 500 years after the flood.
The Israelites were in Egypt for 400 years.
Let's see. Well,
it was more than 400 years.
Yeah, probably would have been. What am I thinking here? Hold on.
I'm not sure.
Let me do the math. Doing some math in my head right now. Oh, 1400 to 1500 years.
Okay.
I forgot 1,000. Yeah.
Easy mistake.
Easy mistake. I was thinking, like, what? Yeah, I didn't carry the one in my head. Okay, right. That's what happened.
So this has gone a while.
Nice
so
catch.
The point I was going to make until you threw me off with your timeline was, you know, the genetic pool of the Nephilim has also been, you know, deteriorated. So they're not
right.
I mean, this is 1,500 years later, so they're not quite as cool dudes as they were before the flood, but they're still obviously somebody to be feared and fierce. Which is why we serve an awesome God.
Right.
Because clearly that was no match for him. But
continue on. So, you know, yeah, you do have that genetic entropy, the breaking down of the DNA over time. You know, then you have this powerful family group. And they have these genetic traces back to the Nephilim. They're still known for their strength and height. Okay. So then what's really neat here is, you know, if you just stick around Numbers 13. In verse 32, then you can notice that there's these four major cities. Hebron, which you'd recognize, that you hear that, you know, all, I think it's one of the cities of refuge. I forget which one. It's one of the special things.
Sorry, what verse did you say you were in again?
This is Numbers 13, but verse 32. And so, you look, am I in the wrong place?
I'm not seeing any cities in verse 32 at all.
Oh, yeah, you know what? Let's see here. Not that one, then. Let's look around. It's where they mention the cities.
The cities in 29.
Is it 29?
I don't know if they're the cities you're talking about. There's cities in 29.
Hebron, and then the other, there's three others that are, they're actually the names of Anak's sons, which is like what I was really going to go for. Where did they go? Yeah. It was just there. So I typed in the wrong number. They're around here somewhere. There's probably someone, oh yeah, here they are. I see they're furiously saying, it's verse 22.
There we go.
22. So See, once again, I flew through this too fast. Missed a one, missed the two. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so verse 22.
I'm glad I'm not you.
They went up into the Negev and came to Hebron, Aiman, Sheshai, and Talmai. And then talks about the descendants of Anak were there. Okay, so that's actually a neat little tidbit. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna talk about that when we get to Joshua 15, which is up next. So these cities give us an impression, though, that there have been, like, this is a major group. You know, it's several cities of them.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that every single person is of this status, but it's at least the leadership of all of them. You know, it's got to be something. So then you go to Joshua 15. And hopefully, I have the rest of my references correctly here, but I did kind of fly through this recording it anyways. So Joshua 15, 13 through 14, we have a little more information. Want to read that for us? What translation are you using there? New King James?
I can, yeah.
Well, I don't... Whatever
translation you want to hear it in.
I thought that's what you had earlier, so.
All right, Joshua.
Yeah, 15.
15.
I thought you had it already, but it should, yeah, you'll
I have it. I have it. I'm getting it. I'm getting it. All right, Joshua 15.
13 and 14.
Now to Caleb, the son of.
No, I have, according to the commandment of the Lord.
You said 13 and 14.
Joshua 15. 13 and 14?
When Joshua 15, 13 and 14. It's all about Caleb. Caleb, the son of Nephunam. He gave a share among the children of Judah according to the commandments of the Lord of Joshua, namely Kirjath Arba. You just have me read these because they're hard names. Which is Hebron. Arba was the father of Anak.
What?
Oh, so we have Anak's father, Arba.
Yeah.
Caleb drove out the three sons of Anak from there, Sheshai, Ahaman, and Talmai, the children of Anak. So those cities each have their own city, huh?
Yeah, so what threw me off when you're reading it is the New King James then had the completely rearranged in the ESV. So same words, they're just completely rearranged. So it was so much so, I was like, what? Okay.
you screwed it up again.
So interesting things here. Yeah, Arba. So do you remember what Anak, how do you say his name? Anak. Do you remember what his name means? Do you remember? Anak? Did I give that yet? I remember I told you before. I told you a while back. So
okay.
Anak is neck. So you mean like neck.
Yeah.
Neck. Okay. It means neck. That's actually gonna come into play later too. It's kinda neat. Actually.
Yeah, long neck.
Yeah, long neck. You wouldn't see that right here, but there's something else that comes up later. And there's a long neck. Okay. Kind of a neat thing. So something weird there. Arba. His name just means four. What's interesting is if you go down a rabbit trail of studying that Hebrew word and other things that are written about that word, that include that word, you possibly can come to the conclusion that he might have been like the father of calculus.
Ah, pretty smart,
it's,
too.
It's kind of an interesting thing. So it's a maybe. It's a maybe. I'm not going to say definitely, but it's interesting. So the old name...
calculus is a spawn of demons.
Yes. Doesn't it make sense?
All right. Everybody stop doing math from now on out.
Yeah, even evil people are intelligent, right? So the old name of the city Hebron, okay, Kiriath Arba. So Kiriath, all that means is basically city of. That's all it was.
Makes sense.
So it's the city of Arba, and then they renamed it. So then what's really cool, verse 15 there, Joshua 14, Joshua 14, 15. So we were just at 15, 14. That's kind of confusing. But 14, 15 actually makes a pretty big claim. Let's see if I can get to it over here.
14, 15.
Yeah, go ahead.
And the name of Hebron formerly was Kirjath Arba. Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim.
Yeah.
Then the land had rest from war.
So greatest. That's kind of a neat thing. So Anakim, you know, obviously Anak is his son, but it was like he got to be like the famous one. It's kind of like, you know, if someone gets to know your kids first, they'll be like, oh, you're so-and-so's dad, right? You know, that kind of thing. And so it's like, oh yeah. Well, you know, people used to say that, you know, you know, you're my son, but now I'm your dad, you know, it's just who knows you. So Anak, obviously he had some fame to be the Anakim, but Arba was greater. Kind of a neat thing. He had three sons, the Sheshai, Aiman, and Talmai, which are the names of those cities.
Yeah.
Which show you there's some kind of substantial stuff there. There's meanings of names and stuff there. There's actually some really kind of cool things with Levitical gatekeepers and stuff, but we'll skip that for now. Okay, Deuteronomy 9:2. That's the next passage. Let's go there. Just use the electronic version here so it goes a little faster for myself. Okay, Deuteronomy 9:2. And I guess I'll start in verse 1. It says, "Hear, O Israel, you are to cross over the Jordan today to go into dispossessed nations greater and mightier than you, cities great and fortified up to heaven, a people great and tall, the sons of the Anakim, whom you know, and of whom you have heard it said, who can stand before the sons of Anak?" Whoa. So it's a common phrase. So they had, I mean, that's quite the reputation. Like basically everyone dies. When they go against these guys, everyone dies. Commonly. So people great and tall. So that height, we keep hearing height and tall. That's a big part of this. And but great, because you can have someone really tall and they can be like really fragile.
Yeah,
Especially
they
if
were proportionately large. They weren't just tall. They were big.
Is it was it giantism? Is that what it is? Was like you can't stop growing? But you often like it's I've heard of something like that.
Yeah, I think
Yeah.
that's
You
something.
have like some physical issues usually, but you just keep you get really tall really fast. But anyways, that's I don't think that's what happening here. These are like substantial people of war that were just destroying everybody. So but anyways, yeah, so this Deuteronomy 2:10 and 11, that's kind of like the great connector passage with all this stuff. So we're kind of like more or less we're done with the Anakim, okay? So that was them. A lot of cool stuff there. So I'm going to go over to Deuteronomy 2. We're going to look at 10 and 11. And this kind of starts to connect a lot more things. And it's kind of like, wait, how big of a puzzle is this? It gets really exciting. God's giving them instructions. Don't mess with, this area. I'm giving it to these other people. I'm not going to give you success. Don't do it. Okay, so then verse 9 says, "And the Lord said to me, do not harass Moab or contend with them in battle, for I will not give you any of their land for possession, because I have given Ar to the people of Lot for a possession." So then verse 10, he says, it's kind of a parenthesis here.
Yeah, in parentheses.
The Emim, well, who's that, right? The
Yeah.
Emim formerly lived there, a people great and many and tall as the Anakim. Like the Anakim, they are also counted as Rephaim. But the Moabites call them Emim. And it's like, whoa, wait, what? And you notice like this is like Moses is just writing this, and it's kind of like, just so you remember. It's something we all know, but just so you remember, it's kind of an interesting thing. It's because it wasn't even part of God's command, right? It's just a parenthesis.
Yeah.
Okay, just in case you forgot. This is how it goes.
Yeah.
So it's like, what? So let's explore that a little bit. As tall as the Anakim. So once again, a common feature is this great height, these giants. So the Septuagint wasn't so crazy to call them giants.
Yeah,
It was
right.
a common understanding. Okay. They weren't wrong. All right. But why are they given that name Emim? Okay. It's an interesting thing. We're going to talk about the Emim next, like the next major category kind of thing. But you're going to see a lot of different names. I think this is how I'm going to explain it. So like, you take like something like dog, okay, that word, you have dogs like all over the world. Okay. But then different people groups, different language groups, I'll say it that way, that's they point to the same thing, and they say a different word. Okay.
Sure.
Dog, Spanish, perro, right? So you have stuff like that. It's the same exact thing, but in different language, different word, right? I think that's what's going on here. It says the Moabites called them Emim.
Yeah.
Well, it could just be because their Ema means terrors. So it's like they were terrifying and they would hurt us
Yeah.
and raid us all the time or something,
Well, it says they're giants like the Anakim.
Yeah. Consistency here is just how horrible of brutes these guys are. That's like you never hear, you brought this up earlier, I think off camera, but you never hear about like a good one of these guys.
Yeah, never.
It's interesting.
There's
Now
never good stories
there could
about
have
the
been,
giants.
there could have been. We just don't hear about
Just there's
them.
no good stories about them.
Which says something. That says something about
them. They're kind of known for being bad dudes.
Big jerks. That's what they are. Man.
They just want to be left alone.
But what's crazy about this passage now is we all of a sudden get introduced to a couple new terms. Emim and Rephaim. And it's like, what's going on here? You know? So then this Anakim and Emim are both counted. That means they're understood as these Rephaim. So what's interesting is, you know, it's another one of those things where word studies come in handy here. So remember, like, Nephilim was the fallen ones, basically. So Rephaim is this other, like, larger category that there seems to be, like, subsets of. I'll make the case later, but basically Rephaim, Nephilim, same thing. They're, like, equivalent. Rephaim is like, you know, it's not really fallen, but it's something like sunken or dropped, or it's that idea of that, like, down.
Okay.
So it's still kind of the same thing. It's just kind of maybe probably different language. So anyways, yeah, this Moabite people. Now, they call them terrors. The Moabites, do you remember where the Moabite people came from? It's bad.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that
it's okay if you
isn't
don't
that
remember.
Lot's kids?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So and Lot's not, kid's yeah. kid, but also his kid.
Yeah, it's Lot's
yikes.
Son and grandson.
Mm-hmm.
That's awkward.
Yeah, it's very awkward. yeah, mommy's sister. Yeah, it's his older daughter in the cave. It's bad. Okay. Yeah, and so that's Moab.
But the Moabites weren't the Emim. They just called them that.
No, but you see a similar thing. The idea is that you see a similar idea with everybody that's in this land of Canaan. So Israel came as God's tool of justice.
Mm-hmm.
They had their chance of repentance. Is what it was talked about in the Abrahamic covenant, Genesis 15. You know, the sin of the Amorites is not yet complete. You know, that idea of these people groups, it's like, you know what? They haven't reached that point yet where they deserve total destruction. So we're waiting. And they waited centuries. Yeah, yeah. God waited centuries.
Long time.
Very patient, very gracious, merciful. But they just got worse and worse, is how I take it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, anyways, that's pretty rough. So besides, though, that Deuteronomy 2, 10, and 11, okay, Emim are seen in another place, and really one other place, and that's Genesis 14, 5. So now we're going back in time. We're going way back in time.
Yeah.
This is way back with Abraham, and when he was, you know, going to rescue Lot. There is a lot to learn in Genesis 14.
Oh, yeah.
I
love that chapter, by the way. That's a good story.
There's so much I'd love to explain here, really. And so you basically have a set of kings that are enslaved by another set of kings. And they rebelled, we're not going to take it anymore. And then they got their pants beat off. and so when there was this whole, like...
And in the process of that, Lot got taken captive.
Which right.
Abraham had to go put his servants together and he'd go and beat some pants off someone. Anyways, that's
318 servants that he takes, yeah. Abraham. So there's a guy with some wealth. God's really blessed him. And I just wanted you to have this picture. You look at, you fast forward all the way to the conquest of Canaan. You have a huge amount of an army of these guys. And they're going up against these guys. They go, we're scared. We can't do it. These are the same dudes, but just centuries before.
Yeah.
Which means that they were a stronger people.
Mm-hmm.
And it also means that, you know, you have a much smaller proportion fighting against them. Abraham, 318 servants, without hesitation, just says, I'm going to rescue Lot and his family.
No question.
And just goes out and does it and beats their pants off.
Because a man is supposed to do what's right.
That's right.
Even when it doesn't look good.
That's right. Yeah, we've been having some man talks lately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Abraham was a good man.
Phenomenal.
Most people agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
Most religions in this world agree that Abraham was a cool dude.
Yep. Yep. Father of many nations.
He was.
Okay, so Genesis 14:5, before we get too sidetracked here, says in the 14th year, Shelomer, however you say that, and the kings who were with him came and defeated the Rephaim in Asheroth Karnaim, the Zuzim in Ham, the Emim, there's our word,
yeah,
in Sheva Kiryathim, and then it goes on with these other peoples, okay?
The Horites, yeah.
So we have that Rephaim word again, which we haven't explained yet. We have this, you know, like Zuzim, what is up with that? And we have these, our Emim people, the terrors. You know, the Sheva Kiryathim, it's the plain, you know, it's like the plain of the double city, or plain of the two cities, you know, something like that. So basically two cities that grew together real big, and, you know, that's how it goes. So it has that plain, that valley, like they're in the hot spot of the promised land. It's beautiful. It was gorgeous. It's very fruitful. And they're like in the best place. It's kind of like, you know, where are you going to find the biggest fish? In the best part of the water, you know? Because they're going to kick out the littler fish. And so it's kind of the same idea here. They're the biggest, baddest humans. They're going to take the best of the land because they can.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Makes sense.
And of course, it's the land that God promised to his people, Israel. Okay. Lots more to say there. I'm not going to say it. All right. This was actually before the Moabites existed. I think this is kind of a cool point because, you know, they said the Moabites called them Emim. Yeah. But then here we have Emim before the Moabites existed. So it's probably where they got the term from. You know, there's a couple ways to work that out, but it's just kind of interesting. You know, of course, it means terrors. So it's easy to understand that, like, a lot of people would find these guys terrifying, probably. So it wouldn't be that hard to just come up with this name. You know, I wonder how many language groups call raccoons trash bandits. Maybe, I don't know, but that kind of makes sense, right?
Never counted.
Okay, right. So we want to keep moving. So yep. Next one, Rephaim. We're finally get to that. Okay, this is, I'm going to say relatively the equivalent to Nephilim. Okay, we've already kind of talked about this a little bit. Genetic entropy, breaking down of genetics, okay, from then. And then you also have intermarrying between non-Nephilim, probably at least some extent, which is kind of watering down those genetics, those genetic traits. But then also there could be some people that, you know, you marry someone like you, or it's simply to preserve your culture, right? Mm-hmm. And so there could have been even like a lot of interbreeding kind of thing, you know, maybe incestuous, which would kind of break them down a little bit too.
Which was pretty common in this time frame anyway.
Incest was not so devastating then because there was a much deeper
genetic. This really isn't that long after the flood at this point right here.
At this point, right.
I mean,
right.
Abraham was, you know, that's not that long after the flood.
Yeah, if you say there's no gaps in genealogies, which I don't really think there is, then you'd have even Shem coming off the ark still alive at the same time Abraham's alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy, you know, in a cool way.
No, he lived a long time, but yeah. So, I mean, really not that long.
Yeah, so that would have been, so this would have been probably something like 500. This is the 500 years, I'm pretty sure, after the flood, roughly.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly.
Okay. Because, Shem lived like 600 years total. He was like 100 coming off the boat, basically.
Yeah, ish.
And so, yeah. And I think when he died, I don't know, Abraham wasn't that old. So, all right, so the term Rephaim, similar meaning as Nephilim. You have the fallen ones, but these are like abandoned, lowered, sunken drops, whatever it is. More of a Phoenician root, kind of a cool thing there. The Phoenicians never called themselves Phoenicians, you know that? The Romans called them Phoenicians. They didn't want that term. They didn't want to be called that. But the Romans called them that. And they preferred to be called Canaanites. So usually when you see that Canaanites in the Bible, that's actually Phoenicians. And so it's kind of neat to put that together there.
That's interesting.
But yeah, more of a Phoenician root, so that probably came from them, at least that name. So anyways, so they're either called, you know, Rephaim because they live in the valley of Rephaim, or it's the other way around. They're just, you know, these stunted Nephilim, and the land was named after them. So, you know, which came first, you know, was it? So, but it's a lot of times it's actually in the Bible that word Rephaim is actually talking about the geography, not the people group. So you have to watch that. Okay. So let's move on. The majority of Canaan seems like to be they're pretty full of these Nephilim type people. The Rephaim, they're mentioned in the Abrahamic covenant, Genesis 15:20. So God gave all these people groups because Abram, he knew them all. He knew like where they were. Mm-hmm. So when they named the people groups, that's how Abram knew the boundaries of the land. And so that's kind of the idea. And so that's nothing too special as far as our interests right now. But there's simply just a quick mention as they name all the people groups, Genesis 15:20, of the Rephaim. And even among that, you have all these other names that you wonder, you know, did they have substantial groups of these Rephaim or whatever within them as well? It seemed like they're pretty well, you know, broad out there. They could just kind of live wherever they wanted to. They're the dudes, mm-hmm. you know. Then you have this Zamzumim. And that's Deuteronomy 2, going back there. And if you look at verses 16 through 22, it kind of gives you the whole picture. But they're only mentioned once. Zamzumim, Deuteronomy 2. That name means like plotter or schemer. So I'm not sure how they earned that name. But it sounds probably like a more localized name again. Kind of like how the Moabites called them Emim. So there's probably a localized name here. Might be the same as Zuzim. That might be a shorter term for that, that we saw in Genesis 14:5. It's possible that means roving creatures. So it doesn't actually count. It doesn't say the Rephaim or Nephilim or anything like that directly. Mm-hmm. But because they're called roving creatures and they're with all these other people and they're named with them in the same list, I tend to think that they're probably a part of that Rephaim crowd. All right, so then the question, what happened to these guys? What happened to the Nephilim? Okay, what happened? I think we're going to probably just save that for next time. And I think that we can actually wrap it up next episode, last one.
Sounds good.
Yeah, and so we'll figure out what happened to the Nephilim. And there's actually lots of things recorded about that. What was the consequence for those sons of God from Genesis 6, what they did? And that also ties into why I think that they would never happen again. And with a slight caveat of a maybe, because it's not expressly written in Scripture that they won't, you know.
Sure.
Gotcha. So if Scripture doesn't say for sure, then I can, you know, I have to be careful. But I think that, you know, if there's a consequence bad enough, people aren't gonna cross that line. That's kind of the general rule. Okay.
Yeah, true.
All right.
All right, well, that wraps us up. So hope you enjoyed Joel's monologue here.
And it was pretty one-sided this time.
And I told you to bring your pillow, so, you know, we should be good. So just remember, may not be anyone's favorite podcast, but at least we're not last.
That's right.
And we will see you next time.
See ya.